So this is a very sensitive microphone, and you don't have to worry about it at all. It'll be very clear. It's just like you and I are talking.
Okay. It won't hit back.
It won't hit back. Okay. It won't squeal. It won't okay. do any of those
okay.
things.
All right. Fair enough.
Hello. My name is Jan Bohens, and I'm joined by Paul Goldman to conduct an interview for the Center for Public History and Digital Humanities of Cleveland State University, and for the Judson Project to document the history of Paul Goldman. The interview is being held on September 20th, 2013, located at Cleveland State University. Paul, you and I have talked a number of times, and I know that you were born in 1923, and your family lived in a neighborhood of Cleveland. Can you tell me a little bit about that neighborhood, what it was like?
I spent most of my younger years in it and moved away as I got older or graduated from college. It was, I guess you would call a standard family neighborhood, one neighborhood after another. It consisted of predominantly Italian and Jewish people who got along very well, which is surprising today. At that time, we didn't think anything of it. We're in the neighborhood of a new public school that was put up. There were two of them made, one on the east side, which was us, and one on the west side. The purpose of the school was to try to develop the students to print rather than write. At that time, and I guess there still is certain, people are so bad in their script type writing, they thought at that time they would teach what we call printing, you know. It was fine, it worked out, but it was a very slow process of writing, and very few of the kids, their printing was as bad as their script because they're trying to do it very fast. It lasted for a while. In fact, it must last. I graduated, I was from the first, from kindergarten all the way up to high school. It wasn't until I would say high school that they transferred over to the, no, even before then, script, back to the old-fashioned script. I never went back. I stayed with printing. And I'm smiling because I think I can write as fast as in printing as anybody can in script. And I've tested with others, and I've proven it most of the time. But other than that, some people print just as bad as they do with script, and they've had trouble with that too in trying to make out the writing. So they went back to script all the way across the board. That pretty much covered, my sixth grade. And also, there was another or a couple of other experiments. The school I went to, public school, was we didn't have desks like they used to have. We had tables, a table of six students. And there was maybe 20 or 30 students in a class. There was a little apprehension about it, but sitting at a table, you're closer than the desks that they used to have. And they were afraid that there would be a lot of trouble or, young kids, acting up or fooling around together. But to their surprise, it worked out very well. The tables and sheds, the kids were very cordial. They you know, attended and weren't discouraged or didn't look away, or they followed the teacher in every respect. At the same time, they also taught us printing, because of, instead of script, which people had, you know, everybody complained how bad their handwriting was, so they tried the printing.
Yeah. What was the neighborhood that you lived in? Where was it located?
It was in the southeast part of Cleveland.
Yeah, what were the streets that?
Oh, well, we were, the main street that ran through the neighborhood was called Kinsman Road. And we were streets ran off of that from starting, I would say, from 130th to all the way to 160th. And there was a street for each number. And there were two family homes in most of, you know, the streets. And the streets were made up of maybe as many as 40 homes on both sides of the street. And we had a elementary school, junior high, and then high school, John Adams High School. Hamilton was the junior high between the two. And we were in this new school. There were two new schools, ours and one on the further east side than us.
Was the school kind of a social
center? It was a brand new building. Uh-huh. Ours was a brand new building with a huge playground, you know, stone.
Did they use that playground?
We used it. The gym teacher would take, you know, weather permitted, would take us out to do exercises and different things that we played and so on.
After hours, did they use that?
It was used after hours, and in the school, there was a school at the end of the street, 142nd, that I lived on, mm-hmm. And they had a big schoolyard. And the older people, on Sunday mornings, had a ball game. I think it was an eight-inch baseball. Mm-hmm. And they would play two, three games, you know, Sunday mornings. Everybody in the neighborhood would go up around, you know, watch them. And these were grown people. And the kids used it, you know, in between classes and before and after class for, you know, playing games and so forth, rather than playing on the street. It was convenient for them to get at. It wasn't, the school was closed, but the schoolyards were used, at least the one on our street on 142nd. It was at the end of the street.
What else did the kids do when they weren't in school?
When we're young, I mean, I'm talking 10, 12, you know, and up, we played around the homes. There were usually two family homes, downstairs and an upstairs. They usually had about six rooms, two bedrooms in each, or so. Some were bigger, maybe three bedrooms. That was what predominantly was in the neighborhood. The kids were pretty much the same. As far as the nationality of the people, there were, Jewish, Italian, a few of the others, but that were the two prominent thing.
And what about when you got older?
We got older, which we went, the schooling went further out, which was Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Hamilton School, which was like 130th in Kinsman. Mm-hmm. And then we went into John Adams High School. And that was our progress in our school, schooling. And from John Adams, you had the option to go to any college you want. I wound up, where did I wind up? That was what I think after the the war, World War was in effect, which kind of stopped helped or slowed down some of the schooling. But John Adams was for, or was it a four thing? One, flat, three, yeah, about four levels of schooling. You graduated at, when you graduated from high school, and then you had the option of going to any college you wanted.
And what did you do?
I went to Columbus, to Ohio State for a year. And I didn't care too much about such a big school and the city itself. You know, it was nothing but the college. So I came back home in Cleveland and went to school at Reserve and finished the 3 years at Reserve.
And that was about the time that the United States got involved.
Yeah, that was in the war.
Yes.
We got in that war. I had about, I was drafted. I wanted to fly. And ever since I was a kid, I wanted to fly so bad. But I couldn't save money and go to school and do it for everything. I couldn't make that much on it. So when I... when I went to school, after the first year in Columbus, I came back here, to a Reserve, and then after that, I had a year. I'm trying to think what I did. When I went to work, it was mostly in advertising and sales.
Yeah, you started to say that you'd always been interested in flying.
Yeah, well, I applied for flying, being taught to fly. And when the war came out, figuring they would, would take me. So we went through the rest, it took a whole day on examining and this and thumping and everything else that goes with it. And it turned out that my eyes were not 20/20, so they wouldn't take me. The government for drawing. So I said, if that's the case, you people are going to have to draft me like everybody else for the war. And they did. They drafted me. For some reason, and I think it's only because I had a pre-med schooling, I was in a medical corps. Mm-hmm. There was me and, maybe 25 other members who were in a medical detachment with a doctor, and we were a part of a trucking company. Now, this company was assigned, eventually wound up, a company of the medical group, which included me. We went to a trucking company that went from the southern part of France to what's the ocean that they hit before you hit Japan. You see, before the war, the United States, or I should say France, were selling to Japan. Now, Japan at that time was three countries, and the northern country was the one that France was selling its merchandise and had to trade with them. And when the war came and the war was over, they needed to use the trucking or the people that were selling to them in France. So the United States picked up a company from the United States picked up the sail, sail to Japan when France dropped it. And that's when we came in. And those that were hired by them. We used trucks. United States, when they were shipping things to Japan at the time, they were flying it. But this private company had trucks, so they used, well, it was a, actually, the, you know, the, they used the trucking setup. And I was with this medical setup, and they had the medical, because the men would take about a week to leave us, go through the mountains, just
the Himalayas?
Himalayas, and then they would stop at the water, and somebody by boat would take it over to northern Japan. We had men, they wouldn't permit the truck drivers to drive at night, so they had a park, and they had campgrounds, and they stayed, I think, overnight. And I think they had to do three stops on the way. And we had a man in each one, a medical, in case they had a stomach ache or something, whatever, you know, they had. Our base was on the western end of the mountains, which started at the southern part of France. And they went across, you know, until they met the water. And we did that, or I was with that for about a couple of years.
And tell me about the medical setup there at the camp where you were.
The medical setup?
Yeah.
Well, we ran daily setups, just like they usually did in the Army, in the morning and in the evening. If anybody was sick or any trouble, they would come either morning or before. If there was anything before, we always had somebody in the dispensary that could attend them during the day or something happened. The doctor was always on call if he wasn't there. We had a regular, both sick call in the morning and in the evening, and in the middle, in between days, that's strictly as it came, as the guy got sick.
And what did the guys come in for usually?
Mostly eating something they shouldn't. Because it was very tropical, and it was hot. And if you know you're in the Army, your parents and who knows sent you all kinds of stuff. Well, you didn't have a refrigerator in it being in the Army, and you couldn't keep it. And if you kept it overnight, it was, depending on what it was, it was to spoil. And the men didn't know, didn't realize some of it that was spoiled. So they'd come in with a stomach ache and so on.
And did you treat anybody besides the guys in the Army, or
we did the natives. We were in a native territory, and if they were kind of afraid of, you know, they didn't know anything about American medicine or anything. They had their own way of, you know, medicine. It wasn't anywhere near ours. But we treated them if they would bring them into the dispensary, and we took care of them. I remember one little guy came in, and we had to give him three tablets. Whatever he had required three tablets. And he was kind of reluctant, but he swallowed them right in front of us. And as soon as he swallowed them, he doubled over like he was in big pain. And then he looked up, and he wasn't in pain. He expected to be in pain. And he looked up, and then a big grin came over his face, and he, you know, rose up straight. It was the funniest thing that afternoon. I say, hey, with the natives, we treated, you know, the natives, the native people. If they came in, and besides our people, we had sick call, you know, twice morning and night, and they come in. If they got real serious, we could ship them to an American hospital not far away. Mm-hmm. And we spent the war, at least I spent the war that way, and for about, what, a year or two. We treated the men. We ran up and down the line. our drivers, the trucks, took them from the time they left us and deposited their thing and came back. It was about a week. And that was our setup.
Where did you do your basic training?
In the United States, I was drafted in. When I couldn't get into the Navy, I said, well, you're going to have to draft me. I wasn't going to go enlist in the wartime. And they did. They drafted me. I got trained. I can't remember where the training was. It wasn't too far away from Cleveland.
And then how did you get, what was the route you took to get to where you were stationed?
Oh, the company I wound up in was nothing but a trucking outfit. Everything the Army did was done by their 6x6 trucks. You know, they had some, I guess if it was really bad, they would be able to ship it to the aircraft and they'd send it. But our setup was to replace with trucks the trade that they had with northern Japan. So anything that was being shipped the normal way before was run by the truck across through the, you know, where the lake.
When they sent you from the States over to where you ended up, what was the route that you went? How did you get there?
When I was drafted, if I couldn't get in the Air Corps, I waited for them to draft me, which I expected it did. It happened. I was drafted. I don't know why I was put in a medical setup on the, what is it, South Carolina? Yeah, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the coast there. South Carolina is where I was trained. When they called me into the Army, I wound up there going to getting some medical information, or they were teaching me medical stuff. It was more or less first aid, really, more than anything else. And that's where I got my medical training, then assigned to a company, a trucking company that would, you know, go that replaced the other civilians. That trucking outfit was, we had men all along the route where the men had to stop. They weren't allowed to go at night because there was no protection through the mountains because it was a mountain area. They wouldn't, so.
Did you get any leave while you were there?
Yeah, it was a norm. It was like if we were in the United States, we got our leave. We'd go see maybe some of the cities in France or the other countries that were close. So we'd get, a week or two, you know, for our vacation once a year. That's the Army, I think, gave us. Or you can spread it out like a week in the beginning of the year and another week in the other part of the year. We were able to see some of the cities and some of the, you know, when we had our time off or given our vacations. It was too far or too long to try to go home or so, but we would visit the local, you know, different couple states close by, and we would see what it's like. And that was about, you know, exciting. And it was interesting because we saw whatever countries or states were close to us. And
when the war was over, there were a lot of men to get back to the United States.
Yeah.
How did you get back?
Well, they took you back to a camp, a close camp. I think it was one in eastern part of the United States. I can't think of the name of it right now. I should remember it, but I don't even know if it exists anymore, you know, because a lot of these have been discontinued and came in. I mean, they've changed the Army and the setup, the way the things are. But when I got back or got out of the Army, I was close to Cleveland and or it was down south there. And went to school, finished my schooling, and went out and seek my fortune. Which isn't very big.
What is that? This was different because it was the first time that there were so many men coming into society again.
That was a particular problem, I guess, for at that time, because some of them were trained before in other jobs. They went back to it. And I think at that time there was a program that if they were working for a company, that they had the right to get back, or they had to hire them back and release anybody else. I'm not sure on that part. But I think there was a setup that they had to be rehired by their old, if they were drafted by the Army, rather than re-enlisted. You know, some just went off to, you know, re-enlisted. Just getting back after being in the Army and living a civilian life was, well, you get adjusted real fast. And I went back and finished my schooling, and I was 20, 21, got married about that time.
How did you meet your wife?
She was a girl of the neighborhood around there. We had a very interesting neighborhood. We had a building that was a public building. Well, it wasn't owned by the public, but it was open to the public, which was used both men and women, and where at that time clubs were a big thing. You know, you would have they were all over the neighborhood and so forth. Your club would be it's generally made up of your own neighborhood people, your friends, and so forth. Now, this building was a number of rooms, and there they opened for your clubs to meet. Sometimes they had an auditorium. They would have dances there. A club would throw a dance for 50 cents. It would cost you $1. They would raise money for their clubs, you know, their club. They would hire a band, and we'd have a dance one night. It would last up until maybe about 11 at night or so. And in the corner of our street, there was an ice cream parlor, a store, Spumoni's, called Spumoni's. It was very well known. Everybody knew it, and it was a terrific ice cream parlor. And we used to go there fairly regularly. Either if you had a date, you would wind up over there. Well, whenever there was a dance, everybody would go to Spumoni's, and we'd sit down, yell at each other for the rest of the evening. we would meet over there and spend the rest of, because the dance would finish about maybe 10, 11 o'clock. So, the kids felt unless you got home at 12 o'clock, you can't say it was a great meeting. I mean, evening, you had to stay up late, you were able to stay up till 12, maybe even 1 o'clock. But that was one of the things we had in our neighborhood. Was this building that gave us they had an auditorium in which club members would throw a dance, and you would pay 50 cents or something and go to a dance. It had places for athletics. If you wanted to participate, you kind of got a membership. You'd pay, I think, a 50 cents or $1 for the membership, or for the, And you would have your club meeting there. They'd give you a room. They had a room for your member. And each club, the girls had the same thing. They had their own clubs, and usually if you dated, it would usually somebody from the club there. the clubs actually would come to the dance. The dance was like a quarter to get in or something. The club would make, you know, a few bucks.
Your neighborhood had a number of different ethnic groups in when you were growing up.
Yeah, it was a mixed deal. It wasn't combined to any particular.
So were the clubs kind of mixed in terms of being of different ethnic groups, or was a club group and another club a different group?
Generally, as far as the ethnic parts go, most of the thing you were with if you're Jewish, you were with Jewish people, and their club was made up of the Jewish kind. You may have an isolated case where you had a friend who was Italian or something, maybe he joined the club. But the Italians were the same way. The Italians had their people, and they had their activities and so forth. Oh, we would meet every once in a while. I mean, isn't that they were mad at each other, but it was the neighborhood was made up of predominantly Italian, or it was made up of Jewish people or some other nationality, or a mixed deal. It depends on what neighborhood you lived in, which is what this eastern part of the this particular thing was, I think, when I keep thinking, looking back on it, and people talked about it, it was a unique deal at that time. It was a building that whoever bought it sold it to this group of people, and they opened it for clubs. They opened it for people, for club people. I think they used it for some other things at the time that would raise money for the owners.
You met your wife before you went away to war.
Oh, yeah. This all happened, what I'm telling you, before the war. When the war came, I was, about 20 years old, 22.
Did you write to her while you
were gone? Oh, yeah. We went, from the time we met, we went together that was it. The only difference, my parents came from Russia. Her parents came from Hungary. They spoke Jewish too, but she also spoke Hungarian. They were Hungarian. And it didn't create any problem in our case or anything, or the parents or so. But it was, they were a rare thing. Most of it was either Italian or Jewish people in the neighborhoods.
Most of the Jewish people were originally from what country?
Where would they be from? Poland, I think. My father was from Poland. My mother was from Russia. If I'm not mistaken, there's a period on the border of the two countries. And when I say my father was in Poland, he was close to that opening between the two countries, and I think my mother was the same way. But those were the two, Poland and Russia, and that was predominantly for the countries, the people that lived around our neighborhood, grown-ups, our parents came from.
You were about six at the time that the stock market crashed?
Could be.
How did that affect your family?
Didn't affect us anything in the way of, our people did not invest in stock. They were not stock, maybe it'd be an isolated case. Our parents were mostly average workers and made average incomes, enough, to keep themselves alive, maybe save a few bucks, save some money. When the kids grew up, we got jobs as soon as we wanted to go to work. So because we would probably need the money to go to college if, we weren't going to go to college, and our parents would help us and what we would earn, and even if we earned going to school, and summertimes we'd work in the stores. But, you know, $5 was a lot of money for us at that time. Today it don't mean anything if you want to look at it in some respect. But
what did your dad do for a living?
He was a painter paper hanger. And I got a story about that in my family. I said, I have two older brothers. My oldest brother, he became an attorney. And I blame him. But my older brother was always after somebody getting married to somebody who had money and, you know, making his, you know, thing. He became a lawyer. He was a lawyer. And my father came from Poland. He spoke, or it's where Poland and what's the country next to it? It's probably along the border there, because a lot of people, they keep saying they came from Poland or they came from Russia. It may be true in the center of the country, but it's mostly, I think, where this outer country is, where they lived on the border. But anyways, back to my story of my family.
You said that you and your brother both went to college?
Yeah, my oldest brother. I had two older brothers.
Yeah, was that unusual when, you know,
your parents somewhat
didn't have a college education? Was that the norm for people to go to college, or was that unusual?
No, the only thing that prevented anybody from going was the fact that they had enough money to pay for the college. And you usually did it by part working and part, you know, going to school. My oldest brother, he became an attorney. And my father and he, you know, my father looked up to him, you know, a great deal for a lot of information and help and respect.
How did your dad fare during the Depression?
When I look back at it, I have two things that I complain my father about and my brother. For one, my brother could have helped my father to become the head of his thing. He was a worker, but he could have had his own business, and the two of them could have gone into business, and my whole life would have been different. I mean, I look at it as a personal thing. Because my brother graduated as an attorney, and if he assisted my father was considered one of the best men in the city of Cleveland as a painting and paper hanger. Mm-hmm. Even during the worst of depressions, he was able to get a job, because the people knew that when he did a job, they didn't have to worry a thing about it. Mm-hmm. And even the people, you know, they would have trouble with not only the guy that did the painting, but the people would complain about, you know, to them. But with my father, it was no trouble at all. He was really good. He was considered one of the better men in Cleveland in his trade, in his painting and papering and so forth.
So even during the Depression, he was able to get work.
That's right. He was able to get, you know, in those days, if he got 3-4 days a week, that was, you know, that was great.
During the Depression.
He was able to maintain and help the family. Mm-hmm. In those periods of time, that period. It was really strange. I got all his equipment, and I learned all his tricks, because I used to sit there and watch him. Mm-hmm. And I can put up a house and paint it and paper it and do, you know.
Good skills.
Yeah, I still have all of his equipment. And I've done it. I've used, you know, I did my own house, I painted it and papered it, and I had no trouble so far. But
did you know other families that didn't manage as well during the Depression?
Well, it varied in our neighborhood, because usually the neighborhoods went by mostly Jewish people, or maybe a few Italians mixed in there, or it's an Italian department, you know, or depending on what your was. People went at that time, because that were our parents, and they came from Europe, and they tried to get to where people who came from either their area in Europe or Europe, so they tried to live, and that's how the city and Some of the places were kept or built up in that form of predominantly people that came from here in Europe or there, because it was all, you know, immigrants that came, and our parents were immigrants.
So did they have a particularly hard time during the Depression?
Some did. Most of them did. We did to some, but my father, as I said, was a good, you know, a good man, and they knew they could depend on him, and he got, you know, he was employed where, you know, where he can, and that, you know, helped us in the Depression. I blame my brother. If he went into partners with my father, they could have started their own business, and my whole life would have been different.
Yeah.
they would have succeeded in a good business. So
you went from kind of this close neighborhood and these clubs and social groups right into, I mean, you went to college for a year, but then the war kind of interceded in your life.
Yes. That was an interesting situation. Yeah. Fortunately, I didn't go to any action.
Mm-hmm.
I wound up in a medical detachment. Don't ask me why, but I can only think of that they may have learned that I was going to medical. I was taking medical, pre-medical stuff. It's trying. I probably would have wound up being a doctor, because that's what I probably. My mother wanted me to be a doctor. Not that
Doesn't everybody.
That did it. But that, at that time, that was a big thing to be a doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, be a doctor. But I didn't take up the course I had at the beginning was, you know, if I wanted, I hadn't come to the decision which way to go, because you needed a certain priest stuff, and I was still in the priest stuff before any decision. I'm going to be a doctor, dentist, or I'm going to be a working man, or what I'm going to be in college. So I hadn't got to that point yet.
You had several years in the service.
Yeah.
And what were some of the life lessons that you learned from that experience?
I guess there's no other way you can treat it, but, you know, the war took all kinds of people in. And maybe it's not so bad now as it was in those days. In the days I was growing up, the nationalities and certain other, what should I call it, well, they were specific setups, and they were very, very conscious of it. And what they did, work they did, this nationality was strong in this kind of work. Another nationality was strong in another kind of work. You don't find that so much. It's more of a mixture, and there's more understanding from what I can see, and where the religious part is not a big factor. I mean, you're proud of your religion and so forth, but it's not as big as it was at that time when I was growing up, when I was young. When I look back at, you know, if you were Jewish, Italian, or, you know, in between or whatever it was. It's totally different. It's more unified than it was then. Remember, the country was still relatively, at that time, a lot of, the only thing you're going to reason or think about it, that's when everybody came to America. All the different countries were sent, and people were coming into America at that time, and now you don't hear that. It's not a big factor anymore, because we're Americans. Everybody's American now. At that time, everybody wasn't. There wasn't such a thing as an American, because there was no American until then. You know, it was altogether a different attitude. It was when the country had its, I guess that's when they had the most immigration of people. was at the time I was growing, I think. And that, you know, they came from all the different countries. And that made a big factor, you know. Everybody tried to bring their country to this country. And then until we found out that this is a separate country and this is what the rules and regulations are, and you got to forget about the other one. And that's an effect that, you know, you got to, they you had to understand. The parents didn't so much, but when the kids, you know, their kids went to school, and that's where their kids learned that they're an American, and this is what American stands for, and they helped, you know, make their parents understand. This is my own personal outlook, if you want. They helped their parents, you know, stamp, because when their parents came here, they still spoke the old language, and the kids, you know, the kids learned it. So they understand it until, in some cases, I mean, it wasn't that way, but predominantly that's the way they lived. They try to live the way they lived in Europe until they learned that this is America and it takes new things and different things. And it took, well, it took, I don't know if it ever did take 100%. I think you still have some trouble, but that's something else.
And in what way did the war kind of impact you in terms of how you saw life?
It made it maybe a little more important to you that the chance that you can get killed in battle. I think this is, I don't know, I think in some respect, too, it also helped us getting together the various, nationalities. I think it was a big thing to do. The guys realized they were American, and when they went home, their parents, you know, they told their parents, you know, they would probably have arguments with their old man and say, you're an American, you know, mm-hmm. rather than you're that, because his parents still thought of the old country. Mm-hmm. It took a long time to get this where everybody thinks that we are American and what America is. And I think the war helped that we were Americans. And that's a different lifestyle. It's a kind of interesting, and we still got some learning to do on that. Because
there were a lot of you that came back to the States, there were a lot of people looking for jobs at the same time.
I went to school, it wasn't a big, I just got a part-time job to help pay for the schooling, but that's what my factor was. And then when I, you know, I got married and my wife became a nurse. She wanted to be a nurse. You know, she had just started when we got married or just was beginning. And she had, you know, wanted to pursue it. I said, I have no objection. You know, I thought it was a nice idea.
Was that unusual for a woman to work?
Yes, it was. I guess you still see some remnants. It depends on the individual. They want their wife to be a wife, and they don't want them to work. I don't know if they feel that makes them look they can't afford the, you know, some or what. In that time, I mean, there's always a certain amount of that, you know, that the wife helps in the family income. That's always going to be, depending on the people that marry. In those days, it was a bigger problem, and it's been slowly, the way I look at it, been diminishing. It's pretty much now you're going to be the housewife, you're going to be the, you know, house, whatever you want to call them. Some things aren't very nice, but you're called that anyways. But, I don't know. I feel I've had pretty much of an open mind about everything, and I've gotten along pretty good. I haven't been as religious, I think, as maybe some people and some think I am, or the way I feel. I don't know. I guess when you grow up, you learn a lot of things. If you want to learn, you're not a stubborn egg and figure this is the way I am, you're going to be that way for the rest of your life, then you're fooling yourself. You're making yourself miserable. If you don't, I've always had an open mind. At least I think I did. And I think anybody that doesn't have it is going to have a very hard life, no matter when it is. No matter how many opportunities they have. And we still got a long way to go with that. It's hard. It's difficult.
I've kind of covered everything that I wanted to talk about. Is there anything else that you would like to add to this story?
Anything else? I told you all the way up to now, and now my wife has died 2 years ago. Jeffrey, and he's got a younger brother. They worked out pretty good. I think damn good. They're two good kids. Not because they're mine. But I don't know. We had a good life. I regret or I feel bad that my wife passed away. But it's one of those breaks, that's all. She was a nurse, and she pursued it until she retired at 60. She wanted to be that. I don't see how she could. She was a pint-sized person. She was real small. And the field she picked was obstetrics. And, you know, you get some pretty big women in there, and she's got to, bounce them around or And she was only, five feet? She was 5 feet two? I didn't think she was that tall, but 5 feet two. But she wasn't, a big person, wasn't fat or, it's surprising. We had no trouble with her working and my working, and she did a good job. And even working as she was, they spoke very, the people she handled, the women that were pregnant and so forth. I don't know, at that time, maybe they improved them, but there was a lot of complaint about the nurses that were, at least she would comment about it. And she wasn't, that way. She was really, kind and considerate with it. I don't know how she managed, and some of these people, they were so big, they were almost twice the size she was. But she got along, and they spoke very highly of her. And her, being a good nurse for her, because that's a real touchy area.
Yes, very. I want to thank you, Paul, for your contribution to this project. It's been wonderful.
I enjoyed it. Fine. Why should I? I'm talking about myself. Who else?